It is 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is currently 55 degrees, getting a little foggy and misty. In fact, at the airport, they are down to 5 miles of visibility. Look for scattered showers and then rain this afternoon, going till about 7 o'clock tonight.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. This fall, for the first time, many babies in the U.S. will be able to get a shot for RSV. It was approved by the Food and Drug Administration today. NPR's Ping Wong reports.
RSV is a virus that can cause serious lung disease, especially among babies. It's the top reason infants get hospitalized in the U.S. This fall, a new product could be a game changer. It's a single shot of antibodies that helps fend off RSV. Clinical trials in babies show that it lowered the risk of hospitalization by 60 to 80% and that this protection lasts for at least 5 months. The drug makers AstraZeneca and Sanofi plan to launch the shot in time for the upcoming RSV season this fall, when the spread of respiratory viruses goes up in much of the country. This antibody shot is one of several new drugs and vaccines in development to protect babies and the elderly from RSV. Ping Huang, NPR News.
New research out today shows an experimental drug to treat Alzheimer's can be effective in modestly slowing a patient's decline, but it can delay up to 7 months the loss of memory and thinking. Eli Lilly and Company is asking the FDA to approve the drug and expects a decision by the end of the year. A brutal heat wave continues across the U.S. with millions of Americans under heat warnings and advisories. One of the hottest places in the country is Death Valley National Park in California. Many people might stay away from there, but Nevada resident William Cadwallander decided to make a special trip.
It gets pretty hot in Las Vegas, but never 120. So I said, you know, I would just want to go to a place sort of like Mount Everest to say, you know, you did it. You climbed it. So when I realized it was going to be over 120, I came out the first day.
He said he posed next to a thermometer that read 132 degrees. The U.S. Agency for International Development said today it will provide an additional $500 million in humanitarian aid to Ukraine. NPR's Joanna Kakissis reports from Kyiv, where the agency's head, Samantha Power, made the announcement.
Speaking in Kyiv, Power said that the additional aid comes after the destruction of the Kakhovka Dam, which caused catastrophic flooding in southern Ukraine, and the escalation in Russian attacks on Ukrainian cities. The funding is for supporting displaced Ukrainians, as well as bolstering health care, emergency shelters, and the protection of vulnerable people in Ukraine. The money will be provided through the UN and local humanitarian organizations. The U.S. has provided more than $2.6 billion in humanitarian aid to Ukrainians since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February 2022. Most of that money has come through USAID. Joanna Kakissis, NPR News, Kyiv.
On Wall Street, just before the close, the Dow was up 76 points, the S&P up 17, the Nasdaq up 131. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. A magnitude 7.2 earthquake triggered a tsunami warning for the Alaska Peninsula and Kodiak Island late Saturday night. The strong earthquake hit about 60 miles southwest of Sand Point shortly before 11 p.m. and was followed by several aftershocks. Sirens sounded in local communities, including Sandpoint and Kodiak, with officials urging residents to seek higher ground. The tsunami warning was later downgraded to an advisory and was canceled altogether by 1 a.m. Sunday. The National Tsunami Warning Center said the maximum observed height of waves off King Cove and Sandpoint was half a foot. The warning also stirred Anchorage residents late Saturday, with some reporting that they got the emergency alert on their phones. Geologists have previously said that it's unlikely that an earthquake could generate a large tsunami in Anchorage. Seismologists with the U.S. Geological Survey said residents in Sandpoint, Clark's Point, Cold Bay, and King Cove reported feeling the initial quake and aftershocks. The pilot in a fatal crash near Old Harbor on Kodiak Island told investigators he got caught in a downdraft before hitting three mountainous spurs earlier this month. As KMXT's Brian Benoit reports, that's among new information in a preliminary report from the National Transportation Safety Board.
A Piper Cherokee went down just a few minutes after takeoff from the Old Harbor airstrip on July 2nd. Two passengers died, the pilot and two other passengers were injured. The plane was a chartered flight from Vertigo Air Taxi, which is based in Kodiak. Clint Johnson is the NTSB's Alaska Region Chief. Johnson says the agency hopes to get more information from the pilot once he recovers.
After he has a chance to recuperate and is ready to talk with us, we're going to sit down with him and see if we can get a little bit better of an idea of the details and the circumstances that led up to this accident.
The pilot has not yet been publicly identified. According to the report, he told investigators that he was attempting to gain altitude to clear a mountain pass when he got caught in a downdraft. He tried to make a forced landing in a forested area, but crashed into two mountainous spurs and stopped on a third. Johnson says it's still too early for the NTSB to verify the pilot's claims.
We do have an NTSB meteorologist that has been assigned to this. He will be doing a deep dive into the weather conditions at the time, but there's no information available at this point right now.
In addition to weather, the NTSB also looks at mechanical issues. Johnson says the investigator didn't see any obvious anomalies on the scene. The agency's next step is to lay out the wreckage in its Anchorage warehouse to examine over the next few weeks.
We're going to be tearing down the engine, looking at the airframe to make sure there were no control issues as far as controllability. There's a whole litany of things that we go through.
Johnson says the NTSB will take about a year before they draw any conclusions about what went wrong. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
The 100th anniversary of completion of the Alaska Railroad was celebrated in Nenana on Saturday. Local, state, and federal officials gathered with the public to mark 100 years since President Warren Harding drove the golden spike that officially finished the line between Seward and Fairbanks on July 15, 1923. In remarks at Saturday's event, Native Village of Nenana First Chief Carolyn Ketzler talked about the community's long transportation history.
My ancestors called this land Nenana, a good place to camp between rivers. It did not take long for the site to become a hub for transportation. By cart, by plane, by boat, or by train.
A group of state legislators presented the Alaska Railroad with a citation, which was read by Fairbanks Representative Ashley Carrick.
The railroad and its builders, operators, and leaders have been one of the foundations of the state's development, supporting war efforts, transporting passengers between Alaska's largest cities, helping build the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, investing in real estate, and facilitating tourism and commerce across miles of remote and wild landscapes.
Among other speakers, Federal Railroad Administration Administrator Amit Bose, who traveled from Washington, D.C. to celebrate the centennial, touted the railroad's value to Alaska and the nation.
Thanks to the Alaska Railroad, new possibilities for trade, transportation, and tourism have flourished, not only for this region, but for the country.
Bose said, "Rail's power and potential remain despite all that's changed over the last 100 years. Alaska Railroad Board Chairman John Shively looked at the railroad's future.
The resources that are still in the ground here are worth billions, if not trillions of dollars. And so there's just huge opportunity. And the railroad, I know, is going to play along a big part of that."
Saturday's festivities included the ceremonial driving of golden spikes by the Federal Railroad Administration's Bose, Governor Mike Dunleavy, and Alaska U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan. The event also marked 100 years since famed pilot Carl Ben Eielson's historic flight from Fairbanks to Nenana, which led to development of commercial aviation in the state. In a year with many concerns over salmon abundance in Alaska, the sockeye run at Redoubt Lake near Sitka could be record-breaking. Federal subsistence managers have doubled the traditional harvest limit in order to stem the tide of a massive return, which, if unchecked, could far exceed the carrying capacity of the lake. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
There have been reports of other sockeye runs around the state doing well this season, but Redoubt Lake is a different animal. The lake is fertilized every year by the U.S. Forest Service to support the wild run of sockeye. It's like fertilizing a garden and feeding the microorganisms that juvenile sockeye eat. That likely makes it an outlier compared to other runs, but no less of a mystery. Rob Cross manages subsistence on the Tongass National Forest.
You know, it's possible that it's an anomaly because of that enhancement. But I don't have an easy explanation for it.
Redoubt Lake is about a 15-mile skiff ride south of Sitka. Surrounded by towering mountains, it resembles an ocean fjord, which it may have been at one time. Its surface is only 9 feet above sea level. Much of the lake is below sea level and is actually salt water, capped by a lens of freshwater. Given its size, Redoubt Lake's sockeye run was not particularly strong, so in the mid-80s, the Forest Service stepped in.
And that was because of concerns of low nutrient levels and that those low levels were potentially restricting juvenile sockeye salmon productivity.
Managers now aim to have between 7 and 25,000 fish return to the lake, primarily in July. This year, the first dozen reds came through the weir on June 15th, and they have not stopped. As of July 9th, 30,000 fish had entered the lake, already 5,000 fish more than ideal. At this rate, there's a possibility that escapement could hit an unprecedented high of 100,000, and that, although it sounds counterintuitive, Cross says is not a good thing.
In this system, like many other systems, we see a point of diminishing returns. So past large run sizes, generally around 50,000 or more fish, have often resulted in a reduced return of the offspring of that spawning generation. And that's just due to carrying capacity factors within the system, like available spawning habitat or food availability for offspring.
Sockeye swim up the falls in summertime, past the subsistence dip nets and the sport flies and the resident brown bears constantly patrolling the weir, and into the 9-mile-long lake. Spawning happens later in the fall, however, and that's where the bottleneck occurs. Most of these sockeye are crowding into the inlet stream at the eastern end of the lake, digging out reds or small depressions in the gravel where females deposit eggs.
We get something called red superimposition, where essentially fish are kind of fighting for spawning gravel.
That plus reduced food availability for the juvenile fish after they hatch, Cross says, are why excessively large parent runs produce small runs of offspring. There are two overlapping subsistence fisheries at Redoubt. On July 1st, the limit in the state subsistence fishery, by far the more popular, was increased to 25 sockeye per day, with a 100 fish annual limit. Effective July 7th, however, the U.S. Forest Service doubled down and raised the federal subsistence limit to 50 fish per day, with no annual limit in the lake's freshwater drainage, which extends over the falls to the mean high tide line. And on July 9th, the Department of Fish and Game opened Redoubt Bay to commercial seining for 4 days, all in an effort to catch more fish now at Redoubt Lake so that more can be caught in the future. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
It's called Weaving Our Pride, a year-long blanket weaving project that celebrates Juneau's LGBTQ+ community, led by Master Linket Weaver Lily Hope. So who can be part of the project?
Every person who wants to be part of something bigger.
Hope says the project gives youth of all identities and supportive adults a chance to sit side by side to create a shared work celebrating pride, community, and self. The work is now underway. Over the next year, a team of 6 weavers will spend several days a week at the Zach Gordon Youth Center to assist in making 2 blankets, one in the traditional Raven's Tail style, and the other in the more modern Chilcat style.
We're going to do bands of rainbow color and do a follow the leader kind of deal. So the mentor weaver will weave one row and the student will come behind and weave exactly the same row. Anyway, it's going to be pretty epic.
Next summer, dancers will wear them for the first time at Celebration, a biennial Southeast Native Dance Festival held in Juneau. After Celebration, the robes will remain at the Youth Center to be worn for special ceremonies that include new names and coming out parties, as well as significant pride events. Only young people can wear them.
The cool thing is that three of these six mentor weavers identify as queer. One mentor weaver has queer children, and the space that's being held by these weavers is safe, healing, affirmative, inspiring.
Hope says in traditional Southeast Native cultures, weavers were taught that their work was sacred art, in which they were instructed to never weave in anger, but instead channel prayers and feelings of love into their work. Hope believes projects like Weaving Our Pride can bring positive, lasting change to the community. The spendable portion of the Alaska Permanent Fund is dwindling and could be exhausted entirely within 3 years, fund leaders were told during a regular quarterly meeting in Anchorage. The Alaska Beacon reported that Devin Mitchell, CEO of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, presented the results of limited modeling that estimates the fund's performance over the next 3 years. Richards said it was, quote, a big deal. The Board of Trustees is scheduled to examine the issue in further detail at a meeting in September and could recommend legislative action to fix the problem. An annual transfer from the fund to the state treasury makes up more than half the state's general purpose revenue, paying for services and the annual permanent fund dividend. But spending from the fund exceeded earnings in the fiscal year that ended in June 2022 and likely did so again in the fiscal year that just ended. On Friday, the U.S. House voted to pass a bill to authorize the military and give troops a 5.2% pay raise. Alaska's congresswoman voted against the bill, as did nearly all other Democrats. In an emailed statement, Representative Mary Peltola said it was one of the hardest votes she's taken, but she said she couldn't support the amendments Republicans added for what she describes as purely political reasons. The amendments passed largely along party lines. They included limits on abortion and transgender care for military members, and they prohibit any military office for diversity or inclusion. Peltola's statement says she believes service members are citizens with rights to privacy and medical choice. She said, quote, we shouldn't be pitting pay raises that they deserve against the reproductive freedoms that they also deserve, unquote. An investigation into the fire at Petersburg's Catholic Church last week concluded that the blaze was caused by maintenance work happening outside the building. A statement released yesterday said that the fire was started on Dolphin Street and was accidental by nature. From there, the fire moved up the wall through the foam insulation inside the vinyl siding. It continued into the building's attic space and then spread over the roof. The fire marshal's statement added that an investigator representing the church's insurance company reached the same conclusions. St. Catherine's congregation will celebrate Mass at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church this weekend. Alaska Supreme Court, with support from the state's Bar Association, approved a waiver at the end of last year that will allow specially trained non-lawyers to represent Alaskans in court for some issues. The Alaska Beacon reports that Alaska Legal Services says the system is unique to Alaska and that the non-lawyers with legal training are critical because there isn't enough legal representation in the state. The waiver is in place, but the volunteers haven't started their work yet. Volunteers will have to undergo training and be approved by the Alaska Bar Association to represent clients in court. The project is modeled on a partnership with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium's Community Health Aid Program, which places health aides in remote communities.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. GCI is a participant in the Affordable Connectivity Program, providing qualifying Alaska households entry-level broadband internet. More information at gci.com/acp.
Stocks open mixed. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute. The Dow edged down. The S&P and NASDAQ were each up a fraction. Traders are focused on second quarter earnings reports this week from Bank of America, Netflix, and Tesla. Wheat prices are up on news that Russia is pulling out of a deal that allowed Ukraine to export grain through the Black Sea. Moscow says it'll return to the deal if the U.S. and its allies meet Russia's demands for looser restrictions on its own exports of grain and fertilizer. China's economy expanded much more slowly than expected over the spring. The government reported today the economy grew a bit more than 6% in the second quarter, much slower than the 7% plus economists predicted. Demand for Chinese exports is down. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 17th day of July, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 5:35. It will set again at 10:55. That will give us 17 hours and 20 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 3 minutes and 15 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high on this date was 79 degrees, set in 2021, and a record low was 35, set in 1927. Let's check in with our new announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 20, date issued 10 a.m. on July 17th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, July 18th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, July 20th, in the Inner Katoy Bay section of the Afognak District. Closed waters in the Inner Katoy Bay section will be the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy Bay and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252, 323, and 252, 324. As previously announced, there will be an 81-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Monday, July 17th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, July 20th, in the Outer Katoy Bay section of the Afognak District. And there will be a 72-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Monday, July 17th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, July 20th, in the following areas, in the Duck Bay and Iseuit Bay sections of the Afognak District. The following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Monday, July 17th. The Outer Iakulik and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District. The Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Kijuyaak Bay section, will remain closed. The Northeast Kodiak District, except for the Buskin River section, will remain closed. The Eastside Kodiak District, except for Passagshack Bay, will remain closed. And the Southeast Afognak, Southwest Afognak, Northwest Afognak, Raspberry Strait, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, and Northeast Afognak sections of the Afognak District. The seaward zones of the Alinchak Bay, Katmai, Dakovac Bay, Outer Kukak Bay, Hallow Bay, and Big River sections of the Mainland District, and the seaward zones of the Northwest Afognak and Shuyak Island sections of the Afognak District closed to commercial salmon fishing at 11:30 a.m. Saturday, July 15th. The Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area remains open until further notice. Closed waters for Salter Creek, stream number 259415, are the normal closed waters as described in regulation until 9 p.m. Monday, July 17th. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Concerning the North Shelikof Strait fishery, short notice, in-period closures may occur for seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the Cape Igvac and southwest Afognak sections as designated in the North Shelikof Strait Sockeye Salmon Management Plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed commercial salmon fishing regulations. Statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recordophone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. West 15 today, seas to 3 feet. North 15, except north 20 north of Dangerous Cape tonight, seas to 4 feet. And north 20 tomorrow with 5-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, west 15 today, going to north 15 tonight, 2-foot seas, going up to 3 feet tonight. And for tomorrow, variable 10, seas to 2 feet in the Shelikof. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Wednesday, July 19th, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, July 20th, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a special work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That will be happening at 5 p.m. Immediately after the special work session, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a regular meeting. That meeting is scheduled to begin at 6:30 p.m. On Monday, July 24th, the Fire Protection Area No. 1 Board will be having its regular meeting in the Bayside Fire Station at 6 p.m. On Tuesday, July 25th, the Parks and Recreation regular meeting will be held at the Borough Conference Room at 2:30 p.m. On Wednesday, July 26th, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having its regular meeting in the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center's conference room at 5:15 p.m. And on Thursday, July 27th, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And remember, assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. Subscribe to get live-stream notifications. Notice is hereby given. The Board of Education will be having a regular meeting tonight at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is number F140 of the old high school wing. For more information, contact the Secretary to the Superintendent at 907-486-7550. KMXT's Board of Directors will be holding their next regular monthly meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 6 p.m. The meeting is open to the public, and members are always encouraged to attend. And if the weather's good enough, they may even hold a meeting outside. If you'd like to attend, call us for details at 907-486-3181. Things happening at the Kodiak Public Library. Summer reading challenge activities continue. And Tuesday, July 18th at 5:30 p.m., that's tomorrow, the library will show Keep Talking for Film Club. Keep Talking follows four Alaska Native women fighting to save the Aleutic language. Share your thoughts, interpretations, and insights into the film. It is for ages 13 and older. Again, that's 5:30 p.m. tomorrow at the library. On Saturday at 1 p.m., join the library for Campfire Stories and Songs. Gather around a real or virtual campfire to listen to captivating tales told by librarians and guest storytellers. It's for all ages. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Call the library at 486-8686 to sign up. On Wednesdays at 3:30, the library offers their Lego Club. Kids under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. On Thursdays at 10:30 a.m., the library is hosting a preschool story time for kids ages 3 to 6. And on Thursdays, July 20th at 3 p.m., the library is having their next chess club meeting. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. You don't need to be experienced. It's open to all ages. Again, that's Thursday at 3 p.m., the next chess club meeting.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday, and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-311, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.